This podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man.
Boy!
Hey, let's talk about you. The ID10T community events at ID10T.com, like Russ Stevens, a.k.a. Cool Movies Darth, who has started a podcast called 90 for Chill, which Russ says is dedicated to movies with a runtime between 74 and 99 minutes, the time frame that I feel is ideal. Russ, I could not agree with you more. That is a fantastic idea. Russ goes on to say, there are times you need a cinematic fix but don't have time for the latest Scorsese masterpiece or offering from a comic book universe. There's also times when you know you need a conclusion to prevent a binge costing you a whole night. My guests and I try to follow these guidelines as we chat up features that are definitely worth your time and are beyond easy to make time for. 90 for Chill, the podcast, can be found on all major podcast platforms at 94chill.com, and that's spelling out 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, 4-F-O-R, chill. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing, Russ. Really great idea for a podcast. Events at ID10T.com for everyone else.
Number one phenomenon.
I created a sport that you could thrive in.
And three players rule the game.
One, two, three.
Jonathan Cross, leading scorer.
You gotta catch me first.
Aurora, the Black Widow.
Just get out of my way.
Marcus Ridley, hardcore.
We play, we win.
Come on! He's the angriest man in the game.
It was only a matter of time before one of these creeps realized that their tank would go up as soon as they got a little blood on the track.
Oof.
Now, the world's most dangerous game.
Have you thought about the girl?
People disappear all the time.
Will become deadly. And the only chance they have...
What's it gonna be? Us or them?
...is to fight back.
Get out of the car!
Grab hold!
We'll deal with this on the track ourselves.
This may be getting out of hand. Maybe we should cool the whole thing off.
No.
Rollerball.
Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Thanks for checking out 90 for Chill, the podcast with Cat Bus Russ. This is your host, Cat Bus Russ. If you want to find out what might be on upcoming episodes, you can follow me on Letterboxd. The username there is CM Darth. That's C as in cool, M as in movies, Darth as in a Sith Lord. And to start things off, I really am just anticipating the next episode of How Did This Get Made, the podcast with Paul Scheer, Jason Manzoukas, and June Diane Raphael. It's going to be Rollerball 2002. Now, I almost watched this about last month, I think, or so. Something like that. And then it was like, I see the clip, the preview clip. I think that was on Pluto TV. It wasn't a preview, just a clip. And it just looked like, okay, they're going to do a movie about roller derby on a soundstage. So, yes, the action of the game, except for some cool shots in the final match, which, blink and you miss them, is absolutely unwatchable. And then you have the fact that it's like, I know you got Paul Heyman doing the commentary for the games, and he's good in it. But I don't need the Kevin Dunn direction style of jump cutting and such. So it's not a WWE movie. It's actually Toho money on the other end of it. So MGM wouldn't take a total bath on this remake of the 1975 classic with James Caan, which is a statement about, it's honestly, this movie is a flips it. It's a statement about individuality and how that's not approved. It was basically a capitalist message in a sense. The original feature, like, well, I mean, the rich run everything. So not really, but they have to prove that the worker is no greater than any other worker. This movie is about a new sport being played in Central Asia. I think Mongolia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan. So they should have worked Borat in. And how Jean Reno is trying to, who's playing a Russian with a French accent, who's trying to create this, basically the new sport for cable TV. And to assure that, he's allowing violent acts to happen on this hybrid of roller derby. Basically, you go around the figure eight track, throw a ball into the an iron ball into the plate that'll turn on the pyro, meaning you scored a point. Original movie, it's just roller derby with motorcycles. Motorcycles are still in this one. And yeah, throw the ball in there. So that kind of sums it up. And Chris Klein's down on his luck hockey player in the States. He's recruited by his best friend, played by LL Cool J, to head over there and use his talents. So there's a pointless opening sequence, which, yeah, really just didn't look stylish in any sense, of street lugeing in San Francisco. I'm not saying some of the stunts weren't cool, but again, the cuts and such. And this is John McTiernan, the man who gave us Die Hard and The Predator. I'm sorry, and Predator, not The Predator, which I have a soft spot for. Allie kind of liked it when we watched it. So, yeah, this is just a real comedy of errors, if anything. Honestly, I'll say the soundtrack might be the best, though, I've heard from the early 2000s. I mean, the Resident Evil soundtrack's probably the best rock soundtrack of 2002. But hey, these guys got Slipknot, and honestly, my favorite Rob Zombie stuff. Only downfall is POD's Boom. So that's a good thing. I like some experimental stuff, like you have a chase scene done in total, which makes no sense. This is like going back and me complaining about the musical numbers in Gold Diggers of 1933. Like, no, this is supposed to be a play. Why are we expanding it? And no, you can't shoot stuff like that. It makes no sense, has no place in this film. So yeah, why are we shooting something completely in night vision? Like, we can't see things, so no, it doesn't make any sense. Just a cheap way of not shooting. I don't know how you could do it, so maybe I should be impressed. So some good ideas. As again, Paul Heyman's great as the commentator. Logic is totally off because, of course, and it's been pointed out in many reviews, that ratings suddenly spike when a violent act happens. And no, that's not how it would work. It would go to the next game. People would tune in for that. ESPN would love this shit. So that's so it's just silly plot ideas like that, and then you get the entire revolution element to it in the end. I mean, I'm really disappointed. Like, I'm not saying I was a fan of We Own the Night, a Joaquin Phoenix, Mark Wahlberg joint. I saw that one just because my ex-girlfriend and her twin sister have a theme for Joaquin. I mean, it could have probably been better, but it's not bad. But the thing is, that movie has Oleg Taktarov in it, one of my favorite UFC fighters, mixed martial artist. and he's usually great in everything. I think he's great in everything. Great in Predators. But this is the first bad one, I guess, that I've seen him in. It's kind of disappointed like that. So there's a lot of good ideas which just get wasted, and it doesn't understand the original film. This is essentially a movie that focuses on the sport and not the politics around it. And they try to make up for it with Chris Klein catching on that Jean Reno is rigging the games for horrific events to occur to get ratings again. But aside from a chase scene trying to get out of the country, just doesn't understand the subtlety of politics, which is something brilliant about Rollerball, the movie that was the first date of my parents. So I guess I'm further offended at Rollerball 2002 because, hey, I'm the product of Rollerball 75, which is a must-see feature. The best fictional sports movie, the best movie about a fictional sport I think you can find. So, yeah, it's just, but at least I know that they were just trying to do stuff on the cheap by the end of it. Like, Chris Klein's not expensive. I mean, I do appreciate this film did better with the nudity. This is PG-13, but they've got at least 4 or 5 different sets of boobs out there. And, I mean, you can pretty much see almost all of Rebecca Romijn's Stamos at the time. I guess it's just Rebecca Romijn or Rebecca Romijn O'Connell. But one of my favorite swimsuit models, so damn. So it just kind of makes me further disappointed. Like, she's going to go and give it all out for this movie, and yeah, fails to deliver. So I really hope to listen to how did this get made takes on this, how fun that'll be, because I mean, it's just a bad movie to begin with. How did this get made? Yeah, it was just extreme sports fad. So, well, you know, I'm going to need to think back. I mean, I really, if I had the time, and I had a lot of car issues this week, and I really wanted to get it, and, you know, I stuck around. Like, I probably could have done a movie Sunday, but I had to stick around and see if the Bills play. So, no time to catch The Beekeeper, but I have another Jason Statham movie. And I've heard great things about The Beekeeper. But I've got a Jason Statham movie, which is nice, subtle crime action feature that I'd like to chat about. And it also starts with a B. Let me just put it this way. It's Jason Statham versus Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. I think that sells itself. And a lot of cameos from, well, a lot of roles from people you wouldn't think would be in an action. Well, a gritty crime drama. Cop. Jason Statham movie. Like, come on. So, we'll get to that, and after that, I'm gonna do my best to clean up a conversation with the Poetic Critic about just some observations I had, and it's gonna get into me suddenly. Like, Martin Scorsese is great, but I kinda, like, I don't think he should be picking a fight with Marvel just because, I mean, it really makes me question, am I not a cinematic nihilist? So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I got to clean up the static on that. I didn't have my Zoom H1N1. I think it might just be an H1N. Hope it's not the frickin' swine flu, I think. I don't care. I don't know. Asian companies. So, yeah, I'll put that conversation on there, and then I might have a treat even after that, if you call a bad movie a treat. If you want to listen to it, that'll be after the conversation with the Poetic Critic. where we're going to definitely talk about Wish and marketing and merchandising. Kind of appropriate that the last bonus episode was the Spaceball one. So hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks for checking it out. And, you know, before I go, let me just get it out of the way. If you want to be on 90 for Chill the podcast, send an email to rustthebus07@gmail.com. That's RustTheBus07@gmail.com. Offer me a movie, a theme, a director, an actor. Try to focus on sub-100-minute material, but if you're willing to put the time in, I'm willing to do anything. Talk about anything. Cash would be necessary for the do anything. So I guess it just said, open the negotiations. You know, with all this chaos, thanks Stacia Harden for keeping an eye on me and making sure I was able to stay out of trouble. You know, safely got home from from the ice storms in Central Illinois and still made it to work. And then they tell me, yeah, we're not going to stay open as long as we want. Or I want. I mean, if I'm there, I want all my money. And, you know, I hope Skimble Shanks, the one-eared angel, is keeping you amused and just keep looking after everybody that you touched in your life, Stacia. So, rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast apps. Follow me on Twitter @CatBusRuss. I prefer you follow me on Mastodon. That's @RussStevens@Mastodon.social. And thanks for checking out 90 for Chill, the podcast.
A serial killer on the loose.
Yo there, copper!
Every day, another officer down. When the law can't protect its own, you need the man who breaks all the rules.
She get a look at the attacker?
All she could say for sure is that he's big and white.
Big and white. So he's not the black kid from Different Strokes.
We've got him.
I want a lawyer and a sandwich. Oh, and I want to update my Facebook status.
He's covered his tracks.
We can't prove anything. So spill.
Are you going to take any notes?
I look like I'll carry a pencil.
Jason Statham. Aidan Gillen.
You're picking the wrong fight. At least pick the right weapon.
Blitz.
And I've just concluded watching the movie Blitz from 2011, starring Jason Statham, Paddy Considine, and a villain is in Aidan Gillen, best known as Littlefinger from Game of Thrones, and he's an Irishman, and you never really get to see him do the accent. Funny, because Jason Statham keeps boasting about his Irish heritage in this feature. So, in other words, if you think Littlefinger's accent was kind of all over the place, kind of the same here, but you can't really beat him as a villain. He just looks very wiry and slimy, but I digress. So Jason Statham is a cop who's getting a lot of bad press because, you know, one, unfair coverage. He beats up three guys who are trying to steal his car. Okay, who had night box cutters? So not a total, you know, all cops are bad type attitude feature. It's so kind of the opposite of Spiral, which has been a recent movie I saw. But Aidan Gillen is trying to get vengeance on the police, and he's doing the best to get the press on his side about it, despite these are very cold-blooded murders, you know. Take a hammer to one of England's prized actors and you're not going to win any fans. in the audience. But so it's a pretty straightforward procedural. A clever enough twist at the end. Jason Statham being cool and calculated Jason Statham. So, and not trying to be overly clever, at least with his character. So it's enjoyable there. You know, I just love English crime drama just because we don't have all this gunplay. So I'm partial to it. I think it might be worth some time.
Hello there.
This is Matty Fragile, the podcast with Cat Bus Russ. This is, of course, your host, Cat Bus Russ. And I've just got a few little questions for the poetic critic. So I got an email today from Target, you know, the weekly.
Yeah, the sales circular.
Right. And big old page for Wish merchandise. And then I was at Walmart waiting to get my tire repaired or replaced. And big ol' Wish merchandise. Yeah. I think I, again, told you so. Disney's gonna make all the money on the back end when the kids finally start watching the movie at home.
Yeah, but I don't know. They've already tried discounting this stuff a few times.
Right? It's not discounted right now. I think they finally realized.
No. Part of it is they keep kicking the can down the road.
Oh, yeah.
They're only bringing out the digital purchase this Tuesday.
Right.
They're not doing physical media copies until March.
Yeah.
And there's no streaming date announced for Disney Plus.
Well, okay, one.
Now that presumably would be when the back end might kick in, if people latch onto it the way they did in Contour a few years back. But that seems an awfully long time to have this stuff shelf-warming.
Well, it's a gamble, but you're going to have kids ask their mommy, and then you're going to have really annoying kids ask their mommy, and boom, it pays off.
It didn't happen with Strange World.
World was not exactly what we expected from what I think parents expected from Disney.
Well, no.
Nor did the children. They didn't think about the children for, well, somebody. Think about the children.
There wasn't much of a merchandising push for that anyway.
Right. No, I think they knew what art had, you know.
Yeah.
This is kind of artsy. I'm just going off the screen drafts, Disney Animation Studio drafts, where it did finish in the top 26. Kids got it once they got it, but it's not something. Yeah, it was a stupid idea for Disney, kind of like Atlantis was a stupid idea for Disney.
Well,
and Treasure Planet.
As Jessica Ritchie, my friend, has pointed out, or others, there is simply no audience for Disney animation with adolescent boys.
Oh.
That is just not a market.
Yeah.
That's the only market something like this could potentially appeal to, and they do not have, but adolescent boys of today do not have any interest in 1930s through 50s sci-fi aesthetics.
Yeah.
Which is what all these movies keep working off of.
Right, so, I don't know who's doing the green lighting, and I'm not saying they're bad movies. I liked Atlantis well enough. Treasure Planet is rather charming, and, I gotta get around to Strange World myself. So,
but with what the back end is going to be on Wish, I just don't think Disney should have let this stuff shelf warm as long as it did. Encanto had the 45-day release date number, so it dropped on Disney Plus Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And people were at home at the time, and that really helped draw some eyeballs. But with Wish, they've just keep kicking this can down the road, because it is it's streaming when this is going. It's not going to kick in until streaming.
Yes, but as I say, I know children. I work in retail. Thank God, that's almost making me say, well, thank gods we're not selling DVDs at my place anymore. You can still get pretty good discounts on Best Buy exclusives, but I do think, at least that store that is going to quit selling DVDs, wink wink, you can still get Best Buy exclusives at rather decent prices. I bought the Super Mario Brothers Steelbook for 4K for $20 when the regular one is still like 27 or so. Because those are probably going to get shipped back to the supplier. So that's how it's working right there. If anybody needs some inside details, I also know a lot about booze. So, one thing I did see today, and it's not really movie related, or is it? Is Goldblum doing a Super Bowl commercial?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Well, I can't really... Well, I haven't watched the Super Bowl in a long time.
He did a Jeep-themed ad back in 2018. Yeah, it was 2018 because that was when Jurassic Park turned 25, and they did an ad theme to that.
Okay. Which is weird. So I think were they Jeeps in the movie? I think they were Fords.
Yeah, I think it was might have been a Ford. I can't remember offhand.
Yeah, so...
But he did that 5 years ago.
Right.
And he did... before that, he'd done a Super Bowl commercial as part of the long-running Apartments.com.
That's what I think it is. I saw the teaser. Yeah.
So he's doing another one. That's not unusual.
Well, it's still... I don't know. It's almost an event for 90 for Joe, the podcast, wouldn't you say?
I suppose. I haven't heard much about any Super Bowl ads.
It looks like, maybe I've planned too big or something as they're prepping for, like, aliens, I guess.
Aliens?
The commercial, it's a Bell, copyright Bellflower production, so I know it's sort of apartments.com.
Yeah.
But it's like a bunch, they're all looking up, they got all flashlights looking up, and Jeff doing his Goldblum-ish. I did see a funny meme, one that you probably wouldn't get because you're not into new metal. Not to say that I am, but I did like the Deftones. It was an image where they face swap all the members of the Deftones with Jeff Goldblum, hence you have the Deftones. Uh-huh. And they did put a little lyric from the song Change. I've watched you, watched it change to a fly. So, I guess the other big thing right now in the media, at least to us nerds, is After Midnight, if you understand my humor at all. I don't know what to think about it. An hour is too much time.
Russ, you should at least explain what After Midnight is.
Well, I mean...
After Midnight has been in works for a while, but this is a revival of sorts of the Comedy Central show At Midnight, which was a bit of a fixture for them in the new 10s, an American version of the British panel show format where three comedians or miscellaneous performers, but they were usually comics, come on to riff on internet happenings of the day.
Yes.
This new version of the series is for CBS and has replaced the old post-late show slot
that James Corden used
to fill.
Yeah.
It premiered this past week.
Right. So I only saw the most recent episode because I have Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I programmed that into your Samsung so you could catch up at any time. And I did like the latest South Park special on there, where Randy Marsh starts an OnlyFans page after being inspired by the art teacher at the school doing that. An extra $10,000 a week, and he's trying to do it as an influencer instead of like a cam girl. But he does have his willy out the entire time. It gets real weird when he starts competing against, when Sharon decides to try to make him stop by competing. No, what do you want with your influence? I want to beat my wife. Okay. So After Midnight, the episode I saw, you had James Davis, some guy from the show Neighbors, who's definitely not meant for this kind of format, and a loudmouth podcaster. So it didn't really click, I think. And as I say, and then after you see one guy struggling and you find it's supposed to fill an hour time slot, just doesn't run as smooth as At Midnight.
Well, it's only a few days old. It is a broadcast service, and there was a pretty good review of the first episode or two over at Vulture that points out. The internet has changed quite a bit since the original show was canceled. Twitter is basically unusable at this point. And social media gets more and more splintered. There's still plenty of the standard outlets they're going to use for the show, stuff like the hashtag wars. But yes, an hour time slot does take a bit more time to fill, and at this point I think that is throwing off the pacing. But on the other hand, a lot of it's going to depend on who they bring in as panelists.
Right. Oh, no.
I saw a clip from the Paul F. Tompkins.
You're right. No, that's the second.
He comes out swinging.
Yeah, that was the second episode.
Yeah.
The first episode had Whitney Cummings. Mm-hmm. It was another standby of the original show. And I think Kurt Braunet. So, yeah, they had a great line at the start, and then it's like, oh, yeah, we have to do a talk show segment.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was kind of cute, but I don't know, the host doesn't quite have the aggression of Chris Hardwick, if I say.
Well, yeah, but as Vulture said, it's nice that nobody's just shouting points all the time anymore either.
I don't hear anything, essentially. It's like, all right, the buzzer sounds the same as the point sound, so yeah, I think it just it's a work in progress, which is
do some experimenting with late night at this point, because it is starting to feel like a form that's on its way out.
Well,
we haven't had it's been a format that streaming hasn't figured out how to crack. They've never quite had a breakout, aside from Arsenio Hall, and that was quite some time ago. It wasn't a straight white guy.
Right.
And it just looks a little, it's just stale at this point.
Well, you did have Trevor Noah. I think The Daily Show really kind of thrived with his outlook, especially as he pointed out, we had our first...
for the ratings to go.
Well, I mean,
that show's kind of...
No, The Daily Show now, without Trevor Noah, is, like, dependent on the host. I think Charlemagne the God should be the permanent host if they weren't going to give it to Roy Wood Jr. We just don't know what you're going to get right now at The Daily Show. They really need to buckle that down. Mm-hmm. Again, Paramount Plus, though, you have to see all these cool things. And I'm glad The Daily Show's at least gone back to a half hour, since they don't have the presence of Trevor Noah to carry that extra 15 minutes like it was doing during the pandemic. Mm. So, yeah. Otherwise, all I really got movie-wise is on How Did This Get Made? They can't wait for The Beekeeper to become more available. And it's getting it's not doing that poorly. At least it's doing better than Expendables 4, which essentially is the same thing, because it's like, yeah, why do we need the other people? Let's just make it Jason Statham. So, only thing I'm worried about is it has a script written by Kurt Wimmer, who I think had some decent scripts, but I also know he did Equilibrium and Ultraviolet. Now, those weren't his scripts. This is the David Ayer movie, so it's kind of like, this is going to be our redemption for the Suicide Squad. With that said, though, honest trailers, there's a lot to sell people on movies. Like, I want to see this. I'm not going to pay the... I would have paid, if I had the time, I would have gone to a theater for the 1 or 2 weeks it was around. I'm not going to subscribe to Netflix to see Rebel Moon.
Right. Well, but that just goes back to there really hasn't been a lot coming out lately. I think
Mean Girls,
Mean Girls is doing okay.
Is this a musical, this new version?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know. Because didn't they already do a musical adaptation?
It's recursive adaptation.
Okay, that's all I'm... Sorry, I had... It's one of those in my collection I have not watched.
But this... There's just not a churn, and I think... Going back to... You're talking about how it's just a matter of waiting for people to discover Wish. I think it's shelf-warming as it is because it's not like anything's coming along to replace it. Like, we don't have any major animated features coming out this spring.
Well, Migration is holding up pretty well.
It did okay.
Well, it's still in the top five.
Yeah, but again, that's mainly because there's not a lot of other options.
I'm just saying, like, if it's doing okay compared to Wish, that means it's doing better.
Yeah.
So I think
Of things are doing better than Wish.
No, but I'm just saying, I think it might have some legs underneath it. Same thing with Wonka, I think is, what, number three or number four?
Wonka is a genuine success story, a movie that people genuinely like, which is something that between Wish and Migration, these are just not movies that, like, what their audience is, the B.O. Boys podcast puts it, the rats gotta have their cheese. Parents have gotta take their real little ones to see something. And that's about all that's coming out for these movies. They're not coming out because they're getting good reviews or because they got good word of mouth or because people were excited for them. It's more like an obligation than anything.
I don't see it that way. Again, I work in retail. There's too many crying kids. There's a movie theater two blocks away. I'm not going to call DCFS on you. Hell, I'll give you... Great, I'm going to have to go and get AMC...
The parents take their crying kids to go to those movies, but that's the only market they have.
But what I'm saying is, drop them off at the theater. I'll go and subscribe to AMC Stubs and give you all my discounts. I mean, at least I know when I hear a screaming child in an aisle... Oh, my tinnitus is not that bad.
But I think if there were a real churn of lots of movies coming out right now, then the theaters wouldn't feel obligated to keep something like Wish around as long as it has. They don't have a lot of other choices.
Well, yeah, it's kind of weird. I think I was driving to get my car repaired. I had to... Thank you, Walmart in general, but there are some good ones. Finally getting there, I drove past our Savoy 16, which has been hell every time. No popcorn. Dude, I understand it. I've been in entertainment business. Just keep a big bag around. Warm it up a bit. Put some more butter salt on it. I'm happy. I don't know, your opinion, movie theater popcorn versus microwave popcorn.
I don't really have a preference per se.
Okay. So, by driving by one side of the IMAX marquee they have right along Route 45, said Oppenheimer and Across the Spider-Verse in IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, it was Queen in Montreal on IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not really up for the 1982 Queen concert. Now, I mean, if it was Queen and Adam Lambert on IMAX, maybe that's different because I have not taken the time to pay money to see Queen and Adam Lambert. And after what I've seen of Bohemian Rhapsody, it's kind of like, man, you guys are really pissing on John Deacon, the bassist, for not joining you on your money grab. So...
But all this points to the fact that theaters are really desperate for... They're willing to take a chance on just about anything right now that could at least bring in a specialty audience and that wouldn't necessarily have to be booked on, like, two or three screens at once. Comparatively speaking,
I do appreciate a lot of Indian movies are filling in.
Yeah, that's a growing market. They tend to have really good per screen averages. Mm-hmm. But what happened over December when The Boy and the Heron got to number one? Now, it hasn't grossed as much in this country as Wish has. It's like about 20, 25 million.
Yeah, but that's probably how much it costs.
Well, that and the fact that it had already more than made up for that money in the original Japanese release anyway.
Yes.
Whereas Wish has crawled past $200 million when you take the international market aside, but the movie cost at least $200 million to make, and given how big a marketing and especially merchandising push they made, that probably pushes the nut far a bit further.
You see, I disagree, because I recently reposted officially to the 90 for Chill, the podcast with Cat Plus Russ feed, not the 90forchill.com, the podcast feed, the Spaceballs episode.
Yeah.
We did.
Right.
And it's all about the merchandising, so...
Well, maybe if Disney hadn't focused so much on that and making a better movie in the first place, we wouldn't be in this situation.
What would Yogurt say? No, I think he'd approve of what Disney is doing. If Mel Brooks approves of what Disney is doing, I have faith.
You never took basic logic in community college, did you?
No, this is how I ended up figuring out that professional wrestling was a better path for me than computer science. I flunked logic, which makes sense because I flunked calculus, and which makes total sense because I flunked data structures in the same semester.
Well, touche. But, I think that does speak to where we are currently in this general malaise for major studio releases. We also see this with how the bottom fell out for superhero movies faster than even the more pessimistic commentators thought was going to happen.
No, I think that's solely just oversaturation. Disney really tried to pick up after the pandemic. The most of the pandemic, I will not say the pandemic is over, had passed, and they were just like, we gotta go and start trying to draw people in. I think they stretched themselves too thin. But that is my opinion. We didn't necessarily need Love and Thunder. Well, we needed it because it was promised at the end game. Same thing with the Galaxy, which, I don't know, everybody seems to love that one. Ant-Man, okay, I don't think we needed the Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. I mean, I still gotta get around to seeing it, so I do plan to. I mean, if MODOK is just a little bit of Patton Oswalt, I think it'll be worthwhile. I don't know, as I say, I've been told Marvel's is great. So, yes. Here's the problem with the Marvels, though, is I do feel I have to watch Miss Marvel. And that's just more time that I don't have. So, So basically, I think they just overfilled everything real fast. And it's like, no, take your time. What, we were only getting like two Marvel movies a year before this?
Well, it was a pretty heavy churn even before Endgame.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, you had, so everything up to 2012 was pretty much maybe one, two pictures a year. 2013, was that Iron Man 3?
Yes.
Alright, then 2014 was... Thor of the Dark World was probably 2013 too, but 2014, Avengers, Infinity War, okay.
But what it comes down to,
but I'm just saying, it was still more like summer, winter.
People are tired of superheroes that aren't Batman or Spider-Man.
I disagree. Those are
the two characters people can want to keep seeing.
But this is why The Boys is a big success on Amazon, because the people like me and Seth Rogen want are, or why Sandman was a success on. So, okay. Am I a nerd? Yes. So I guess I'm kind of disqualified. But, no, but that's like saying, no, don't try anything else if it's not Batman or Spider-Man.
Well, it's not like, if anything, we're in the age where it's too obvious to tell from the reams of preview material they keep bringing out for movies, especially franchise movies, but it could also apply to something like Wish, is that it's clear from the previews this is just the same thing you've seen before, only worse. And that's one reason they're saying that these movies are like the Marvel movies are going to have a second life once they get to digital platforms or streaming doesn't make sense, because we already smell the stink off of them.
Okay, here, this is it. I think that is just, did I want 10 years off from Marvel? And at least Marvel movies. And I will say yes. Because if I have to take 10 years off of Star Wars, everybody else has to sit for 10 years once your story's told. That is my nerddom. So, but you know, I gotta overlook that. I gotta look beyond that. And no, I can't really say I've seen anything that looks too stinky. Like, it's not YA bullshit. Now that's the PU.
Well, actually, it is.
Like, I'm sorry. I will get, as a Star Wars nerd, I'm going to say PU stop.
James Cameron was commenting when he was making, when Avatar The Way of Water was gearing up to be released, he pointed out that if you really look at the kinds of things that most of blockbuster filmmaking of the last 10 years or so has been concerned with, it's about people whose concerns are those of college students at best. They don't want mature things. They are just YA stories.
Yeah, YA.
Part of the story he wants, you can debate how well or not he did it. I haven't seen the film. But with Avatar The Way of Water, he aged up the characters so they could have a family and deal with parent-child dynamics. That's the kind of thing that most movies that have been aimed in the blockbuster market over the past 10 years or so just don't deal with anymore. It's not that far removed from why Martin Scorsese has trouble accepting something like the Marvel Universe is on the level, the creative and level of ambition as the films people like him make, is because they're not concerned with human relationships or struggles. They're not relatable stories in a lot of ways.
It's more of my martial arts theme imbalance. I'm getting changed here. I gotta get through that one. I'm more of the, what's Keanu directing that's all martial arty? Because of the, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not necessarily looking for relatable. Oh, the Sam Worthington has kids now. Dude, you don't need kids. I'm 40. 34. I mean, it's that's just it. Like, I mean, there's people like me, and I think that's why Ant-Man is so cool, who is just trying to really figure out how to finally succeed at what I'm chasing. While Martin Scorsese, well, there you go. It's really I'm surprised, I guess, with this discovery, because Martin Scorsese's rather a nihilist.
I'm not exactly sure you can call someone a nihilist just offhand. There is something about being realistic about the inherent cruelties of human nature.
Yeah, but
that doesn't mean that
there's telling that story, but then there's like Goodfellas ends with Henry Hill in life destroyed, and he's never gonna get that back until the book makes all that money from the people who didn't watch the movie in theaters. It was all about the Oscar buzz that got that over the top. Killers of the Flower Moon. Have not read a plot synopsis, but I'm pretty sure it's like, and everybody's unhappy in the end. So, and this is coming from somebody who appreciates a lot of nihilism. I really dug the nihilists from Big Lebowski. At least they weren't Nazis. Granted, Nazis at least stood for something. So it's like, I don't think this is, I don't even want to think too much deeper, because now it's like, let's go to the opening scene of Swordfish. I'm just saying, like, there's one thing of recovering from Yondu's death. Like, When your story doesn't have the possibility of a positive conclusion, I mean, how many times do you expect when you're a talented director like Martin Scorsese, am I going to go see it? Yep. I'm really disappointed that Raging Bull did not make the top 10 of the screen drafts list. Because too much toxic masculinity, that's what I'm getting at. Scorsese is selling stuff that only he necessarily wants to see. And it's easy to tell stories that are very depressing when you got people giving you the money to tell them.
Well, that's a very limiting view of art, I think. And certainly...
I'm just saying, I don't... He got over his coke issue. Thank you, New York, New York. So you can say it's limiting, but it's like, you know, if that's where your head space is at, that everything's gonna end in depressing fashion with a final shot that really like explains the movie to those who he thought wouldn't get it, which is kind of insulting to the audience, hence the rat at the end of Departed, or Henry Hill picking up his newspaper and then seeing an image of Joe Pesci shooting at him.
Well,
I'm just, that is just, that is, that is,
nihilism, that's just, the idea that things don't matter, then... A lot of franchise filmmaking could be seen as nihilist. If you think about it, one of the major problems that franchises like the Marvel Universe or DC films struggle with all the time is that it is very hard to affect lasting change on the world the films take place in. The characters can battle over, I don't know which stand-up comedian said it, but these movies are just, most of the time, about action figures fighting over a rock.
Okay. It goes back to a Robot Chicken sketch where Batman's doing the eulogy to the Green Arrow. And why are we even doing this? How many of you out there have died? Show of hands. Come on. Come on. And eventually, after he's done going on his rant and everybody starts cheering him for it, you see Green Arrow in the crowd.
It's hard to relate to stories where the concerns of ordinary people have no meaning.
I wouldn't necessarily say
They're just props at most. Well, but the stories don't end with these heroes legitimately reshaping with the power they have, the world the story takes place in, to be a better one for everyone. Often, that's a running gag in Honest Trailers. It's dead status quo. Status quo.
Okay, you say that, but then let's see. Oppenheimer is a story of a guy who, to save a million lives, he is put in a further peril.
Well, actions have consequences.
Right.
And it's from that that drama inherently comes.
And that's how we got the excellent Marvel Captain America Civil War. That's how we got the fun nature of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
I think that's one thing that I think... I mean, it's possible to be toxically positive, too.
Yeah, no, this, we're talking about Disney. For, I mean, let's just face it. Ariel should be nothing more but foam.
Now, doesn't mean that a person can't tell a story the way they see fit. Little Mermaid may not have much to do with Hans Christian Andersen, but it makes for an entertaining narrative on its own because the filmmakers at least committed to telling the kind of story they wanted to tell.
Yeah, but I prefer my topless Polish mermaids singing at punk bars. Check out The Lure. I'm sure it's probably in rotation on Criterion Channel.
But even then, this actually does step into why I think one reason Wish didn't seem to connect with audiences. I kept hearing the complaint in a fair deal of reviews, not all of them, that it's not really much of a story to be concerned about. Some people won't get their wish granted. Boo hoo.
That is your uncle speaking. I'm going to say that's the cynicism speaking. No, we have to have that. You want cynicism and nihilism. I'm one who said, you know, hell, hope is the one thing I don't want because hope is for the dying. I hope this doesn't happen the way it's going to happen.
It's interesting to read about Wish and how people who have seen Wish have taken the movie. And the most popular character is the villain because a lot of viewers feel sorry for him.
He
created a utopia where all races and creeds can coexist in peace. Where people aren't taxed to death. That's in a peaceful part of the world and is further protected because their ruler knows magic.
Okay. This is like Larry David inspiring Thanos. You have to give me that 15-minute window. I was here at 7. The parking lot was full. Give me the window. You know, I tell you, if there were half as many people as there are now, it'd be a better place. You know what, Dan? Cockeye to Larry David. You know what, Larry? I think you're the villain. And I think archery isn't a real sport.
But you have a story where the only problem is that it is a condition of living in the kingdom that you willingly and with full knowledge you will not remember what you wished for, give up the wish. And people are willing to trade that off for the chance it might get granted someday.
Yeah, no, and those people are idiots.
Well, that's the thing. Why are we supposed to care about their fate if they got themselves in their own problem in the first place?
Because we're supposed to care about people. That's the... Now you're making me turn into Anakin Skywalker. not the emo Anakin. We're talking Jake Lloyd Anakin.
Mom, you always
said the world would be... the biggest problem in the world is people don't help each other. And I will go and actually say, I think movies like, well, the James Gunn's Peacemaker series, and Simon Pegg and and Edgar Wright's The End of the World, The World's End, sorry,
mm-hmm.
pretty much make it clear that it's just not in our human nature to actually want to do what's best for everybody. Like, yes, we got cell phones as part of a plan to create a utopia where we can be whoever we really want to be, but you're telling us we have to be whoever we want to be. And we're human beings, we don't like being told what to do. And boom, Bill Nye ends with an epic, and the world goes to the Stone Age. Spoiler alert, but it does not qualify for the podcast, unless you want to talk about the entire Cornetto trilogy, because Shaun of the Dead does. So, see, but this again is like, I think saying like, I sympathize with, I don't know if I've ever sympathized with, which Chris is this?
Chris Pine.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever sympathized with Chris Pine. Sorry, Captain Kirk. Spock had all the right ideas. Okay, see? That's going to the logic and that bollocks. Yeah, so... No, I think we're still just dealing with cynicism backlash. Like, I think the problem is we came out of
cynicism backlash.
Because I think we came out of
You argue that these Marvel movies and stuff aren't cynical, but they're not the movies people are seeing right now.
No, I think they're only not being seen because people are just like, no, give me something new. I just went through hell for two years. I want things to change. It's like, dude, you were happy with this. It's like dealing with a cat. Why, like,
It's healthy to re-examine your priorities. I can't blame people for wanting something new, especially when the studios really seem to slack off on whole quality control.
Look, weed became legal in Illinois. Do I smoke weed? Yes. Do I get stoned? Do I lay around getting stoned? No, because I know that I don't need that.
And if there is a cynicism backlash, I think there's plenty of reasons to be cynical.
Look, you're talking to a guy who is introduced to most people at bars as, and this is Russ. He's the most cynical asshole you'll ever meet. But once you get to know him, he's the nicest guy ever. So, no, I think I'm kind of a master on this, but maybe that's just it. I don't like these poser cynics. Get real bitter, people. And then come to me. Not over frickin' cinema.
Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's more content than I ever expected out of Wish merchandise, and hey, what's Jeff Goldblum doing? So, thank you very much, Poetic Critic. I do get around The Beekeeper, because if you want cynicism, that's a pretty cynical movie, just the premise. Especially for a leftist like myself. Despite, I don't know, something like, they tried to throw in some Hunter Biden jabs in this movie. I think David Iyer said, no, we're not doing it. You know, rich people and their stupid kids. But, you know, we're not picking on Donald Trump. So.
Okay. And. Yep, I think that's gonna be enough because I think the audio is gonna suck.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bup! Superman!
The Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron that in all future generations, his descendants who have physical defects will not qualify to offer food to their God. No one who has a defect may come near me, whether he is blind or lame, stunted or deformed, because he had a blemish. I, the Lord, do not sanctify him." Leviticus 21:16.
There's something wrong with this place.
Some stones is best left unturned.
Trust me, it ain't no joke.
Well, Chris Jericho was mentioned in my conversation with the Poetic Critic, so let's get rid of another one of his few sub-100-minute movies. He really hasn't done that many movies, and I do want to check out this one that I think I can find on YouTube, but that's because it's Sonny Chiba versus Roddy Piper, so can you blame me? But the feature I'm going to discuss is Albino Farm, a horror movie, very low budget, and it's Chris Jericho plays a character that makes you think, yep, he could definitely do the things he may or may not have been accused of. So it's a story about a bunch of college kids who are focusing on one project, and then they get distracted by the stories of a town in Missouri of deformed people, and the bros in the group talk everybody else into doing it. And as soon as they arrive there, just things start falling apart, and they have to keep relying on different people to try directing them in the right place. Again, all kind of deforms. And Chris Jericho is probably the one who isn't, but he's got two deaf cousins who just want to see boobs, and, you know, he'll trade that for information. It's just a creepy movie. I will say there's some decent kill effects, but, well, I probably should just say a decent kill effect. Otherwise, it's fine makeup for our deformed characters. I mean, passable for no budget. I mean, Chris Jericho's appearance, I hope he did it as a friend, because I would imagine that would be where all the budget went. Script is no real great dialogue, no humor. It's, honestly, I'm just trying to rehash it because I got this on a Netflix DVD. Somehow I lost the file when I originally recorded the review, if I recorded the review back when I was planning to do the MacGruber episode. Everything kind of becomes nonsensical with the story. It's just a wraparound for a hopeless ending, and that's even just brushing over that it's all based around a society that's really misread the Bible, and everybody's part of a cult. Pretty run-of-the-mill stuff. At least it doesn't do anything silly like trying CG effects to make it look fancier. I admire kind of the effort in it. Just where did you think this would be interesting, I guess, is where I'm coming from. Like, you either have to make it very gory or clever, which it definitely failed at that. Or you really just have to have a sense of humor and make something that we're going to laugh along with. So it misses the mark despite, I mean, it's a valiant swing, I guess. Not having the movie immediately in my mind might have softened beyond it, because I appreciate the effort. And as I say, there's at least some moments where you think, well, they might have something, but it's all might, and there's really nothing there except one boob shot. Definitely one not worth trying to dig up, and thankfully this is way before I was hoping Netflix would send me 10 free DVDs once that service ceased.
Can I hear a wahoo?